Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where we spend just a little bit of time wondering if we really did wish you were here, whether good luck can genuinely be conveyed via images of terrified kittens, and if postmen have better things to do than to read other people's messages, as we attempt to understand the memories, meanings and stories held by picture postcards. I'm Tom Jackson, and today I'm delighted to say that my guests are both very busy people. We're lucky to have them, not like the usual layabouts we have in here. And they are Justin Edwards and Cariad Lloyd. Cariad and Justin, hello and welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, Justin Edwards looms large in British comedy, a man of many parts. You may have seen him as part of the Consultant sketch show, as drunken children's entertainer Jeremy Lyon. You'll certainly have seen him as MP Ben Swain in The Thick of It, or as Anthony in In and Out of the Kitchen. And he's all over the place on television and radio, and is recently back from Broadway, where he was playing in The Ferryman. And he's half of the brilliant cast of the Where This Service Will series of radio dramas. You'll know Justin from his extraordinary performances, where he tends to combine bluster and a terrifying vulnerability. Definitely performances for our times, I would say. Now, Justin, you come to us with an SO5 postmark?
SO5,
what's that?
Small village in Hampshire called Bracefield, where I grew up my formative years, and I still sort of, it's almost fading, the postcard now, because I've sort of moved and have family and roots elsewhere, but my dad still lives there, and I still find myself back there often enough to sort of regard it as that sort of home, or, you know, where you're, yeah.
Where something started.
Yeah.
And do you still send postcards?
I was trying to think the last time. I still send sending birthday cards. I'm very bad at sending birthday cards. And less so, and I used to write a lot as well. I was discussing with Elle, I've just been clearing out a big shed of stuff, and I found piles of letters and postcards that I used to write when I was a student, you know, before mobile phones and before the internet came along to spoil everything. And we did just send long, rambling, pointless, you know, oh-so-hilarious student letters full of sort of ridiculous squiggles and drawings and odd gifts to each other and postcards, but less so now.
But that was keeping in touch, wasn't it?
It was. That was the only way to keep in touch, yeah.
Well, Cariad Lloyd also ploughs the comedy furrow, and she's equally busy. You might have seen her improvising ostentatiously with the improv group Ostentatious, but you'll probably definitely have seen her on television in shows such as This Time with Alan Partridge, where she memorably played the marine biologist Alice Fluck.
Fluck.
Correct. She's been in Murder and Successful and Peep Show, and she pops up on Hignify.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And I think she's been in Wilty.
Yes.
And Cree.
Cree, yeah.
Cree.
You can play that on Scrabble, do you know that?
Cree.
Yeah, Cree.
Really?
Mm.
What does it mean?
That's a good one. It's a Chinese energy, I think. It means like spirit, like your energy.
Your chi,
but you can play QI.
Very good.
Scrabble tip for you there.
Yeah, we'll make a note of that. But actually, it's here. It's this kind of domain, this world of podcasts that Carrie has made her own in recent years with the multi-award-winning Griefcast, Funny People Talking About Death, which has been a sort of boundary-breaking, entertaining podcast. Amazing, really, that no one had ever tried to do it before. But, like, those good ideas, it just kind of pops up and there it is.
Yeah, I know. People always say, how did you think of it? But, like all good ideas, I didn't sit down and think, what's a good idea? I just thought, I'd like to talk to people about death.
Mm. Yeah.
And then because I like doing it, I think it becomes listenable.
And I think it's a sort of it's very podcasty, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't really imagine a commissioning meeting for a plain radio series. I think it was like, well, we like it, but
yeah, they would have added something to it. I think the joy of podcasts is that it's me talking to one other comedian for about an hour, their experiences of grief and death. And it's very open and honest and intimate and sort of that can only exist in a podcast world.
And it's funny and it is touching as well.
Yeah. Some people.
I think different people will take different things from different people's stories, won't they?
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, every week is a completely different story of grief and death. So whatever you've been affected by, I always say there's normally an episode that you can listen to. And even if you haven't, if you're someone who doesn't feel you're in the club, inverted commas, there's lots of episodes which are just funny, amazing stories that people have lived through.
Yes, and it's the stuff of life.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Cariad comes for us today bearing a rather vague N. All I can read is an N.
N, sorry. North London is what I was thinking. I was actually thinking probably the fairest, like anything that covers the Northern Line branch from High Barnet to Camden.
That's where you feel you belong.
Yeah, that is absolutely, because I grew up in Barnet and then I've lived on that branch and I find it difficult to move anywhere else. Every time it's come up, I've been like, I sort of need to stay.
I'd always assumed you were born in Wales.
Yes, people do. Yeah, hence the name Cariad Lloyd, yeah.
It's very Welsh.
And people run up to me and go, Shadoc and Rye? And I go, do you live in Shadoc and Rye? Yeah. No, my dad's side are from Wales, but they actually moved to Highgate.
So you're a nostalgia for Wales.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And so he was a North London boy and I've lived in North London my whole life and I love Wales, it's lovely, it's beautiful, but I didn't grow up there. Yeah. I went on holidays there.
I was the same when my dad's Welsh. We had to go on holiday all the time to Wales.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, so we're as Welsh as each other.
I just pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, my name is just slightly more Welsh. Yeah, and it was a bit of a... Sounds awful. It was a bit of a punishment sometimes, when it was like, right, that's it, we're all going to go to Cardiff for a week. Like, oh, God. No. Yeah, it was a bit... Especially just because it rained. That was why, just because it rained.
Well, I was talking to a comedian the other day in this room, and her family are from India. And she was saying, we just couldn't have holidays because what you do is you go back and visit relatives.
Yeah,
and to a lesser extent, I think that's what you're describing. Really.
Yeah,
in a sense, you've got to go and do that.
Yeah, 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 exactly. But yeah, but North London is absolutely my home. I couldn't live. I'd struggle to live somewhere else.
That's what you think.
Yeah. Mm.
When circumstances change.
Well, if you say New York, sure, I'll try.
You fall on hard times, you have to come to South London. You'll survive, you'll survive.
My mum would never forgive me. She literally grew up, she was like, if you go south, I'm not talking to you. Oh, she's that, yeah. But actually, she's from East London, so I don't know what her beef is. But there you go.
And when did you last send a postcard?
Not that long ago. I'm a postcard sender, but mainly to my mum. My mum loves a postcard. So I think it's probably the last time... Oh, but see, last time I went on holiday, she came with me, so I didn't send
That's
one.
No good.
That's no good.
Didn't you slip one under the door? Or
yeah, yeah. There you go. So probably...
It's a bit awkward, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Actually, probably, like, I send postcards, like, not as often as I'd like. And same as you, digging through postcards recently, I found loads of lovely letters and postcards I used to send. But I send postcards to my niece, who lives in Kent quite a bit, because that's quite a nice way to...
How old is she?
She's 10, and obviously it's very exciting. Yeah. We send her postcards from London, and she gets really like, she got a post! Ooh. That's quite exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think people grow out of that? Because I don't think I do. I think getting post just remains fun.
Yeah, it's still fun. And then obviously I realise now, like for her, because she's 10... Getting posts is really rare, like really exciting.
Oh, I should make an effort with my children, shouldn't I?
Send them postcards. You see them every day.
I do, I know. But I think that thing you're right of something through the post, because I don't get letters anymore. I get just bill and just sort of, dull grown-up admin things through the post and occasionally.
It's quite nice to send a fun postcard to your child. They get really excited and she like has kept them all.
And I think thank you postcards are nice. You've had dinner or something.
Yeah.
Really
actually,
nice.
I sent a thank you card just the other week.
There you go. A postcard to do that?
To my friend who came around and really helped me with a big tidy up, and so she always sends me cards, so we have a habit now.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I still try, but not as much as I'd like.
I think the thing about postcards, and I'm not a kind of obsessed with postcards, though people might think I am, but I'm not. I think their function shifts a little bit over time. Like, they used to be used for making appointments and saying, I'll see you on Saturday for tea or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they kind of got less used during the war. And then after the war, the country got back on its feet and people started going on holiday. And they were very much used for holiday. I'm doing this. We've been camping.
Yeah,
and then, of course, you go abroad and it's like, we're having a lovely time in the sun. And then they kind of fell away as social media came in, and now I think it is much more about courtesies. Just because it's nice. It's nice to do that. It's nice to say thank you.
It's a bit more effort than just sending someone an email or text going, lovely dinner last night, thanks, lovely catch-up. Which, if you've got that on your phone...
You can write in the cab home.
Yeah, that doesn't count. You've got to write a thank you card.
Yeah, because when I wrote this thank you card to my friend, I couldn't just put, oh, thanks so much for coming round. I had to put, like... Dear Vanessa, thank you so much. It was really lovely to see you. And actually, you were really helpful and you didn't even realise it. Yeah, you have to put more thought into it.
Yeah, thoughtfulness is probably the sort of characteristic of them now, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's not easy, especially not finding stamps.
Oh, the stamps. And the postbox. I tell you what, somebody does still post things. Trying to find a postbox. It's tricky. Yeah.
They haven't moved them, have they?
They're still there. Just think there's less.
There is a website. I couldn't find when we moved out to the suburbs. I spent ages going, where's our nearest one? That can't be it. That's miles away. Isn't there one on the way into school? And you can go onto the wall and type in your postcode and it tells you where your nearest postboxes are.
That's so useful.
It's quite good. And it was still miles away. Wasn't
it? Well, funny, I used to work for Royal Mail postcodes.
Mm. You're joking.
No, and I used to be on the phones and people would ring me to check what a postcode was before the internet, before you could just go, what's that postcode? Yeah,
so they'd ring you with a street name?
Yep.
And you'd tell
them.
And
I was sitting in a massive call centre and I'd be like, I'd type it, what's the address? And then I had to learn all the...
Is it a skill you've still got?
I can still... I remember most of the... When I'm giving postcodes, I can still do like the, you know, what is it, like Alpha... I can't remember any of them now. Echo. Papa. I used to know all Gamma.
I've heard you talk about your time in a call centre.
Yes.
And how you misbehaved.
That was the job I misbehaved, was the postcode job.
And how did you misbehave exactly?
I used to do different accents. Yeah, and I got fired because they were listening in.
They were listening to realise.
I used to do speech impediments in different accents because I was so bored.
Good.
My best friend worked next to me, so I would, you know, like do like Texas or something like
that. So you're trying to make her laugh.
Yeah, what postcode you want? Oh, I don't know that. Yeah. Oh, well, let me tell you. It's E5. And then I got really bored and I started pretending the phone had cut out. So,
Do it, Norman Collier.
Postcodes, street name. And they'd be like, sorry, you keep cutting out. So sorry. Can I? Yeah, and they started listening in.
The thing is, you give some people a tiny bit of power.
I know.
And they abuse it completely.
It was a job you genuinely had to put your hand up to go ask to go to the toilet.
Oh, wow.
So they were, and I was about, I think I must have been about like 18, 19, so...
And that's all gone now, I presume it's all online.
Well, you just have a website, There was literally a whole floor of people on
devoted
phones.
To,
literally just
answering.
Giving postcodes.
And that was a sort of moment, wasn't it? Sort of moment after postcodes became mandatory, but before the internet came in. It was like a window of history.
And to be fair, mostly it was old people ringing very panicky. Going, I've only ever written the house at the corner.
And they're the people you were mocking and giving a hard time.
Pretending you were texting to as well.
No, I was
they
already...
were right to sack you.
I was nice to the old people because they just couldn't understand you if you did anything
If you did anything too confusing.
Yeah, they just didn't know what's going on.
Well, before we discover the cards, and I know there are cards that Carriot and Justin have brought along, I'll give you one of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past type card, like I do on Twitter, past postcard. An old card from which I've selected just a part of the message. So this is a card... Actually, thank God we've got a Welsh speaker in the room.
Oh, no, you don't. You don't have a Welsh speaker there, sorry.
I heard you were fluent. So this is a church, what's it say, the marble church at...
How did you say that? I don't even know. Bodlewyddin?
Bodlewyddin.
Wythen.
But I don't,
It's a rather odd picture because it's a lot of sky. And this sort of sepulchral church.
It's a big steeple in there,
that. Yeah, like and it looks like it's sort of, placed on a wedding cake.
A bit French Gothic, if you ask me.
Yeah, very odd picture. Anyway, this was sent in 1970.
Oh.
A long time ago. Just two lines that I took from this, really, that I thought had something. Weather perfect, daddy had sunstroke. So, there you go. I'll do another quick one. This is much better known to everyone in this room, I think, the Albert Memorial. One of the oddest pieces of architecture in London. But
it only just fits on the postcard. That's hilarious.
Really very bad planning, wasn't it?
Yeah. They could have just
stepped back a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just...
Yeah.
Guys, there's perspective.
Fill the frame. Fill the frame. It's obviously a sort of Victorian Gothic memorial to Prince Albert. And this was sent in... hard to say, in the 80s, I think. And it was sent to Newcastle upon Tyne from London, I think. And it said, someone who's taken a trip to London. This is about their time in London. So just two lines about their time in London. I'm always intrigued to know what people from out of London think of time in London. They said, had a meal in a wimpy bar, had slight problems with the tube. Actually, that's probably...
You could say that now.
Yeah, exactly.
About the same.
Exactly. That's all you need.
And is that a stamp for 14p?
Yeah, so I think that's relative.
It must be quite recent.
Yeah, for me that feels recent.
14p!
Well, first kind of stamp, I remember when that was about 12p. Wasn't I?
What?
My earliest stamp buying days.
No, I've no memory of 14p at all. My God, that's nothing.
Yeah. Maybe that was in a period
actually,
when you weren't.
How much is a first class stamp? I don't really. I'll buy them.
63? Is it?
Blimey.
I know, because you buy them in those pack of six and they cheekily just put first on them, don't they?
Yeah.
I can tell you a large letter, second class, is £1. No, it's 85p. Because I have to send a lot of them.
Yeah, I send large letter first class, 197.
Oh, yeah, that makes because I think it's 85p for second.
But if you don't pack up your package right, they claim it won't go through the thing, and you have to say, just try harder.
Just push it through that thing.
It's going to go through, and look, that's nothing like the size of a letterbox.
I know. That large letter gauge is interesting, isn't it? You think if anything could be shoved through the large letter hole.
Frankly.
If you have enough effort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a matter of will.
It is willpower.
Not physics. Anyway, to let you know at home, images of all the cards we discussed today are on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, and you can investigate for yourself. Now, as I say, Carriad and Justin have been kind enough to bring cards to the studio today. Let's start with you, Justin. Tell me about the first set of cards you've got for us today. Which I think you're revealing quite a lot about yourself with this. This is an interest of yours, I believe.
These are three. These I collect beer mats because I've got small children. I don't get out much.
let's just how did this start?
I don't know. I've always liked them. They're, as you say, they're sort of ephemeral pub things, and I had in the village I grew up in had a very interesting and unique pub that was sort of we spent most of our time in from about the age of 14 onwards, and only closed down about sort of 7 years ago. The landlord and landlady finally both died, and the whole thing was then sold off by the brewer, and it's now luxury housing. But it was an extraordinary sort of pub, and they had they were owned by a particular brewery, and they had particular beer mats. And I don't know why, I just sort of bought some nostalgically on eBay, and like, oh, this reminds me of sitting in that pub when I was 16, and the world seemed sort of sprawled ahead of you. And then there was buying more and more beer mats because it turns out they're very cheap to collect because you can sort of go on eBay and buy 500 assorted beer mats. Absolutely loves it. For about £2.99.
So she may not share that excitement with the postman.
And you sort of sift through them, and it's likely you sort of put them on the table. Oh, look at that! Well, then you find some just ridiculous things. That's amazing. Oh, there's a one from 1972, and here's a weird one from the sort of World Cup 1966. And then here's a rubbish one from Foster's one from 2 years. I don't want that one. You know, it's kind of, and I don't collect them. I then got into I sort of spoke to the Beer Mat Collecting Society, and people are very, very strict and rigid about collecting like stamps, and you have to sort of frame them in certain things. I just kind of go, no, I'll put all the ones that I like the look of in this frame, and all the ones that are sort of, I've got a great collection of just ludicrous soft drinks like cherry brandy ones and baby sham ones, and some of them I just really love the artwork, and so I'm a bit.
It is a
random
piece of popular art, though, isn't it? And you're curating it and saving it.
I like to think about that. My wife doesn't. I've had sort of downsized them slightly, but they kind of, they gather. So I've been framing. So anyway, but this is there are postcard beer mats, and I've brought a couple with me.
So we're combining the two worlds here. This is fantastic.
So this
across the beams.
Yeah, you'd have found this on your. In your pub, you put your pint there, you turn it over, and it's a postcard on the back, and you think, I'll write to someone from the pub, sprawl over it. I don't know where you'd get a stamp in a pub. Maybe they sold them, and then you'd forget about it and leave it there in the toilets, I imagine. So I don't imagine I ever got sent, but it's, But this one, in particular, it's Whitbread Trophy Bitter. It's like Donald McGill Saucy Sea postcard, but really, have a look, it's really badly drawn.
Oh my God.
And
slightly, badly printed as well.
And slightly awful.
Is this from the 70s, we think?
It's mid-70s, and it's one of a collection from, it says what brewery it is on the back, so Whitbread Trophy Bitter. Big enough to satisfy your beer buds, and this was their slogan, I assume, at the time they came around. Big enough, that's good. Whatever your beer buds are, whether they're some kind of nodule.
Taste buds,
it must be, And so the whole series is based on these red-nosed men satisfying their beer buds and bucks, and this is a sort of particularly weirdly drawn buxom barmaid.
She doesn't look well, does she?
Who looks like she's got some terrible affliction, sort of skin.
Rosacea, a lot of rosacea going on.
Saying, I think your beer buds have been satisfied enough, boys. Your warning lights have come on, as in their noses are so red, they're so paralytically drunk. She seems delighted by that. You know, but it's really...
It's the kind of humour you see on Edwardian cards.
Weird.
It's so old-fashioned.
Yeah, it really
doesn't
work.
But it's weird because it's like the implication isn't like, oh, you've had a good time. It's like, you are all so wasted.
Yeah.
Your faces are literally glowing red.
The blood vessels in your nose have burst to the extent I think you should go home.
Yay! So,
in fact, maybe you would be allowed to use that now because it's actually a health warning.
It is a health warning.
You're not allowed to show people having a particularly good time with alcohol. That's the rule. But to show them getting ill, maybe that's actually a good idea.
Yeah, a buxom bum, but it should be a very severe mouth throwing them out of the pub or sort of, you know.
Yeah, how weird.
Anyway, it's slightly strange, but it remains unsent.
Yes. And I suppose one thing about these cards is I never quite know what the protocol is about stealing...
taking beer mats.
Beer mats.
Yeah, it's a very...
I like to try and do that, particularly when you're abroad. Oh, that'd be nice. Ooh, never do anything with it.
Yeah.
But obviously this was... You were meant to steal it.
Yeah, and this one was meant to go...
I think you can steal... I used to work in a pub and... The idea is that they're paper and they're just going to get very wet. So I don't think...
They're meant to be there. And also, they're slightly pointless, aren't they? They don't really protect the table from beer.
No, they don't do anything. I think they genuinely give people something to do with.
Yeah. And then you can tear them up and you can flip them and do things. But they are also solid advertising. There are lots of weird ones in my collection for games and competitions whereby collect these... You know, this is a series or whatever and you're supposed to collect them all. So imagine you were encouraged to sort of stick them in your pocket at the end of the night or...
Come back for another six drinks.
Well, there's lots of cigarette and crisp ones, so you would sort of be drinking and just staring consistently.
Must have crisp.
So I'm sure that, and there's some really good ones that advertise. I'm going to go on about this too. They really advertise pies as well. I've got a whole series
of that's a nice
pies
one.
You can buy in the pub. You know, there's ones that have been under it in a kind of glass case, mouldering for days. And when you get drunk enough, you just look at your beer mat and go, "That's a good idea. I better have one of them."
You just wave the beer mat at the barmaid. Well, that's brilliant. So, beer mats that you could send as postcards is a genre. It's not just this isn't a one-off.
No. There's quite. I've got one other one here, which was slightly more modern. I'm going to be reading glasses, but that's Chan Stefan, which is another Welsh.
As we know it well.
Okay, and post. So that's the Welsh word for correspondence, which I won't pronounce. And that's the Welsh word for address. Goodness.
I can't.
That's how you say enjoying a pint of. I'm not going to read any of these out in Welsh because it would be offensive. Enjoying a pint of Buckley's. So this is. Yeah, again, you're encouraged to write to these people and go, here I am in a pub enjoying this pint of thing and here's some information about the place I'm in. So, I mean,
that's a bit more souvenir-ish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a functional postcard. It fulfills all the kind of postcard
remit. Yeah, it's like a proper postcard.
And hopefully your friend will receive that and go, gosh, Buckley's Traditional Ales. I better have a go on this.
What a lovely outdoors holiday you're having.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah.
How healthy you are.
And these are slightly smaller than postcards because they're
They have
mats.
To be, yeah. Because if they were, regular...
Yeah, they look bigger than beer mats, though, don't they?
Yeah, because they're slightly...
Slightly more, yeah. I have got some, I think, which are the regular the beer mat size, but you wouldn't be able to get much on it by the time you've had a stamp on and...
Well, especially the Welsh one.
Because they've had to translate everything on their twine.
If you tried to use a fountain pen on these...
It would be
like blotting paper, wouldn't it? It'd be horrible.
They're designed to soak up in your beer. That's true.
That's literally their job.
Yeah.
You need a quality biro.
You need a quality biro and a steady hand.
Or in those days, maybe a rollerball.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
The latest
pencil. This is probably why they didn't really work as an idea.
But if you're going to have something, why not pretend that it has another function? It's quite a nice idea. People love things that appear to have two functions.
Yeah. There's other beer mats, you know, that are part of sort of almost mosaics. You have to collect them all and stick them all together to make the picture of some beer.
A pie.
Yeah, it's a massive pie.
And then you're like, oh, I want a massive pie.
I want an enormous pie and a massive...
You've got one more card of a pub here to complete.
This is from the
pub selection.
Kirkstone Pass in the Lake District. I used to go up to the Lake District. I was a student in Manchester, and we'd go up to the Lake District, and we'd occasionally walk up the Kirkstone Pass Inn, which is the highest pub, the highest in Lakeland, 15,000 feet.
Wow.
And they go on and on about how high it was, and very passive-aggressive. Well, not even passive, just really aggressive. things up on the walls in the toilet about how you really shouldn't flush the toilet unless you need to and stop, you know, wasting electricity, because they couldn't have electricity there and they couldn't have mains drainage. They had to have generators and everything to power because it's so high above anything. And so in the middle of nowhere. So instead of celebrating this fact and sort of saying, welcome to our extraordinary, unique pub.
It's hard.
This is really difficult running this place, so just you respect it. Yeah. That might have changed. This was 30 years ago.
I believe the current owners are wonderful.
Absolutely delightful. But you'd go there and get slightly stuck there because we'd be, you know, young 18-year-olds, and we'd have sort of 3 pints and think, how do we get back? I can't walk. hitchhike home. But we sat there, and this was never sent. This was a group of four of us who were... thought we were being terribly hilarious and thought, let's send a postcard to our drama tutors back at university who were Ken, Mike, Viv, George, Claude, Chris, Jarrett, all of them. They're still Dr. David, all still alive, most of them, I think, although since retired. And
a decent relationship. You wanted to send them a card.
Yeah, they were all quite. And so we wrote this hilarious sort of postcard, which thankfully we never sent. But I found it going through the thing. So this must be, this is I think 1990, possibly 91, maybe. This would have not been sent.
But and what are the rudiments of the message? What sort of thing are we getting up
dear
to?
Dear department friends and colleagues, this famous inn has a genuine stone half. Basically, I think we'd just written everything with Sierra and Spiral staircase, unique to the toilets and telephone facilities. Upstairs, Sunday hours, hot drinks served all day, aspirins over the bar. Weird. Bring a friend or come. My name's Pippa, I'm a male parrot. They had a parrot in there.
Oh, very good.
Other patrons would appreciate you not hogging their fire in capital letters. I think that was another aggressive one.
Yes.
Yours lovingly. Yeah, and then we never sent it.
Slightly getting your own back on these aggressive signs.
Yeah, I think we found them...
I think that's quite amusing.
Unwelcoming. But they were... I'm sure it's absolutely delightful now. But the picture on the front is of the, you know, nice traditional thing. And a lady who's sort of been forced to hold a candelabra unwillingly, as if to say, right, get in the photo, Jean.
Yeah.
Show them the candelabra.
I don't want to hold the candle.
Wear your traditional dress. It'll look good.
I look Swedish. It's in the Lake District, Gerald.
I'm not happy with this.
Oh, my God.
What is she doing? What is it meant to mean?
I think it's the land. It seems like, you know, in the 80s when it was like, you can't just take a picture of a pub. There should be a woman in there smiling.
A woman in just to show them that.
Is that because she's coming to do a very formal dinner? Is that what it is?
I think it's a bit Christmassy.
For me, it's ghostly.
It is ghostly.
And also, she sort of held them slightly behind some flowers. I mean, it's not a great photograph. Yeah, in any.
But she seems to be dressed in like Victorian clothes. That's the ghostiness. She's not wearing modern clothes.
No,
she's wearing
her
long grey skirt.
Very
odd.
But I do like the fact that a lot of those postcards or those images are just, they're not great shots. They're not very well taken artistically.
Yeah.
It's like this is, you know, badly done.
I do like, small hotel and guest house interiors.
Yes, kind of.
Done with a flash.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I mean, they might be nice places, but the photos make them like places
awful,
you'll be murdered.
Sort of out terrible rooms with someone smiling badly in them. Yeah.
And empty bars. Well, brilliant. Thank you for sharing your pub obsession there, Justin. It's really good. It's really good. Carrie-Anne, what's the first card you've got for us?
My mum always sends me a postcard and I always send her a postcard. My mum, as I said, she grew up in East London but also Essex. So she enjoys a smutty postcard.
Ribbles.
Is there a connection there? I don't know.
Well, I think it's like slightly Essexy humour.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, there's definitely... East End Essexy humour, like that's what my granny and granddad thought was like, oh, a bit cheeky.
Cheeky humour.
Yeah,
okay,
cheeky seaside humour. And she, I think because she grew up like going to Southend and Broadstairs and around, you know, those were holidays where you had aunties that lived, you'd go and stay with them. So you'd buy your, as you said, your Donald McGill. So whenever she finds one, reprints, she gets very excited. And so she then sends them to me. And, you know, I'm, as most people are, a feminist, a modern day feminist. And sometimes I get them and I think, what is this? but they're still funny because they're obviously so of their time. And the two ones she said, I mean, they're definitely not okay. Like in 2019. So the first one says, good heavens, I dreamt I was married. And then a man is leaping up from a nightmare, sweating next to his wife, quite clearly.
Is she in curlers? I hope. Yes, she is.
No, she's just got curly hair, not curlers. Yeah, actually, she looks...
So he is married?
Yes, so he's married.
So it's a sort of double... It's complicated.
It's
surreal.
The curtains are open. How is he sleeping? There's lots of questions here. He's very, he thought he was married and he turns out he is. Yeah.
So the nightmare was that he was married, but in fact he really is.
He really
the joke's
is.
On him.
Yeah, his nightmare has come true.
Wow.
And we were saying it's stamped, but I think she forgot to post it because it doesn't have a mark on it. But I assume it's from when she went to the Isle of Wight because she goes to the Isle of Wight quite a lot.
Were you married at the time she sent this to you? Is this any comment on anything at all?
No, you know, we weren't. I can tell you from the address. Yeah. We weren't married. She just thinks. And I did. Yeah. I remember saying to her, "Why did you send me?
Why did you send me?"
She said, "Oh, they're funny, aren't they? They're funny." She's not. This one's awful. This one's awful. This says, "I mean, this is in the land that we live in now. This is not okay."
Wow.
This is the classic huge woman, skinny man combination they loved.
So, a larger lady and a skinnier man. And then behind her, a very skinny lady wearing not very much at all. And the larger lady is saying, old meanie won't buy his queenie, won't buy his little queenie, teeny weeny bikini. And she's in a very big swimming costume. He's in a swimming costume. And there's obviously a skinny lady behind her wearing nothing.
So she wants I find the logic of these
it's
really
so, hard. I know, they're
she
so
weird.
She wants
the little bikini.
She wants the little bikini.
Because she thinks it would suit her.
Yeah, and the man is looking very red-faced.
He looks both sort of furious and angry and scared and all sorts. Really.
And he's got a full body swimming costume on as well. Stripy swimming costume.
I think he's just prudish.
Maybe he's prudish. Because the lady isn't wearing a bikini. I would describe that as Donald McGill has drawn some dots on her tits.
Yeah, like, really, yeah.
That's what's happening.
She's not wearing much, though.
Yeah, really. And I was like, Mum, what is this? Oh, it's just funny, isn't it?
But it is funny.
It's odd, so isn't it? It's so odd. And your brain, you're right, like your brain sort of knows the joke, but then when you start unpicking it, you're like, what?
This is very,
yeah. So she does love a cheeky pose. She'll either send me a nice, I haven't gotten here, but normally it'll be like a nice picture of where she's staying. She likes that.
That makes sense.
The classic. Or if she's in England, she can find a smutty one. She likes a smutty
one. Funny how these, I mean, this must be, it's probably pre-war, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know.
But they still retain an interest for people in reprints because you sort of still have associations of that kind of image.
The seaside, and, you know, Kiss Me Quick hats and Stick of Rock and all that stuff, which we kind of think, this is...
Why is the seaside the place for naughtiness?
I guess because where you wear not wearing so many clothes, are you? Mm. So it's like the first time you could possibly see a lady's ankles.
But it was traditional escape, wasn't it? Because all of the, you know, it was the place where everybody went on holiday. The big factory works out and went to the seaside. So it's obviously the release.
Isn't it?
And then, it's the same when we go abroad, when people go on holiday to Spain and you go mad and drink all day.
Yeah. The normal rules don't apply. You've kind of got this license to be.
You know, you're somewhere else, which is so different from your standard life that you
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Like you're on holiday, you're not having to be yourself.
But also, they say you wouldn't see your work colleagues in bikinis.
In bikinis, in their shorts, which you probably, I imagine, in those days.
I mean,
my granddad was proper, like, he would go on the beach, roll up his trousers, handkerchief knotted on his hat, keep his shirt two buttons undone, was like, he's on holiday.
I've got pictures of my granddad on a beach wearing basically plus fours and an extraordinary sort of Buster Keaton style hat.
Very good.
In the blazing sunshine, idea that he would, you know.
Oh yeah, and my granny as well, just in a dress with like just up to the knees. She'd paddle. That was it.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's a very. So it must have been quite shocking when people started getting into bikinis.
Yeah, I look at cars, a lot of the cars I'm dealing with are 60s and 70s. Certainly the early 60s ones, you'll see a group of people and all the men are wearing black suits. Business suits on the beach.
We didn't know what to do. I mean, let's face it, we didn't know what we were doing, did we? We were a repressed nation, we'd just had a war. People start saying go on holiday, we don't know what we're doing.
But also, the day that they took that picture of those people on the beach, it was probably freezing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Then they got to work on the sky in the postcard studio. It was really horrible.
It was probably pissing it down.
And I think one of the great myths is that, I mean, well, we have quite good weather at the moment, but that's only because the world is ending.
Exactly.
But a seaside holiday is in any way, you know, one day of sunshine.
It's one of the things I find funny about postcard messages is that so many spend their time complaining about the weather. Did you think going to the seaside would make it sunny?
I know,
That's never been the case.
Never been the case,
You're not in Spain.
Yeah. No, exactly. So, yeah, but my mum spent a lot of time doing seaside, so she's very working class, and going to Southend was like, whew, that was exotic as a child. So I think that's where the Donna McGill got burnt into her brain as acceptable forms of communication. And delightfully, my mum has written on the back, wish you were here.
Oh,
and that's it.
Good work.
She always writes.
Good work, Carriad's mum there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because no one writes that very often.
I know.
I think she's
really
getting
her postcards as traditional as possible.
Absolutely.
She normally says, weather nice, wish you were here, but these are just wish you were here.
Does she do it in the thing I always still like to do if we stay somewhere, you know, in a kind of big hotel when me and Lisa are in somewhere in Spain just before the kids were, and it was one of those, and you get a picture of the hotel and you write X on your window and you go, our room, and you send it off, and it's just ridiculous. It's this massive tower block of 1,000 rooms. That was ours.
Now you can imagine where we were.
You can see what it's like from that side looking in. Imagine us sitting there.
It's very exciting because I think that's a great moment because postcards by definition are mass produced and the image is on 1,000 of those cards or 10,000 or whatever, but you've put your stamp on it and suddenly you've personalised it and it has real meaning for you. I think it's great. Oh, you could have done the pub. We sat at this table.
We could have done it, Or drawn a crude approximation of ourselves.
This woman was here.
Yeah, she was
had
there.
No candelabra. Yeah.
Would not move. Really unnerving. Couldn't get past her.
Blocked way to gents.
Jean is a permanent fixture of the stairs.
Well, that's very good. And great to kind of go back to the glory days of comic postcards. I'll do a couple of quick ones from me now. These are both about the telephone. And, of course, the telephone, to some extent, was the first kind of threat to the postcard, because you could phone home from your holiday. But before that, it was quite difficult. And this is a card from Derbyshire, a multi-view, as they call them, lots of pictures. And it's 1978, August, from Buxton.
going to Enfield.
Oh, lovely. And, that's my gaff, yeah.
Probably someone you know. And it's quite a common theme, actually. Excuses. Excuses about why you never got through. They said, been trying to ring you, but keep getting engaged signal. Maybe something wrong with the phone. Or it could be that Dad did not put it back quite in place after speaking to me on Friday. Can you check?
A postcard to say, can you check?
Your postcard quite working.
Yeah, a postcard because the phone call didn't work.
How long must it take him to get there and then be like, Bill, check the phone?
And I think below the surface, absolute fury.
Oh, fury. I've been trying to ring you.
Fury that someone else is talking to them. So they could just be engaged because they're...
Yeah, they might be having another phone call.
Something going on. And this one is another one, a telephone. It's some old ladies on a bridge.
Is that in Rydal?
Let's have a look.
Is it Rydal?
If it is, I'll be...
No. In Watersmeet, Lynmouth. Other end of the country.
Absolutely.
Couldn't be wronger. 1985, being sent to Truro. They're not that far. This had something sort of melancholy about it, I felt. I'm sorry our phone call last night was so unsatisfactory.
Oh.
I think we've all had that phone call.
Yeah.
It must be really to then have to write to them afterwards. You couldn't just phone them back again. Yeah. There was the in contact.
Yeah.
They spoke the night before and it must be so terrible. Oh, I can't even phone them back. I'll have to write to them.
It was so unsatisfactory. I don't want another unsatisfactory.
I'll have to leave Truro, go away for a while and write a card.
An unsatisfactory, I think, maybe an understatement. I think they had a row. They had a row.
Massive kind of...
Oh, that sounds like a big row.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. And my guests today, I'm happy to say, are Carriad Lloyd and Justin Edwards. Justin, what's the second card?
This is from my village, as I mentioned earlier. I think, I bought this on eBay. One night thing. It's very nice. I was very happy going out there, but it's not on the way to anything or a destination point or anything. So there's no real, that's a pic. No one would visit. It was just, if you live there, it was great. And there was a school and some pubs and shops, lovely. But it wasn't it's nothing. There's a couple of thatched houses, and this is one of them. And I found that I was sort of Googling or looking on eBay to see if there's anything from the, there are a few old images of the, and this is a postcard which someone's obviously just taken, Thatcher at Brashfield, which is the name of the village. And it's, I know exactly where the house, it was around the corner from where I grew up, this opposite the pond, if that helps any of you.
Is that saying whose house it is at the bottom?
Doesn't say, no, that's Mrs. J. Wheeler, Eastern W1. So I don't.
WI. Women's Institute.
Is it? No, that's a one, isn't it? I think. So maybe
that's it.
It's WI.
Is it WI?
Because you had these WI postcards.
It's WI.
I think you could buy a strip of them, the local WI.
Oh, yeah, it's published by the Hampshire Federation of Women's Institutes, filmed by lithographers in Worcester. So when they come all the way from Worcester to take a picture. And it's nice, it's a very picturesque.
It's very pretty.
And it's an action shot.
There's a man, Thatcher.
He's thatching.
He's thatching. He's mid-thatch.
Say what you like about him, he's thatching.
He's thatching. And it's Yeah, and the house looks exactly the same. Well, obviously, you can't really change very much, but it's, yeah.
We'll just date the roof, our first things first, slate this over.
And I don't know who lives there. I used to know who lived there when I was growing up. Obviously, you know, it's changed, probably changed hands a few times. So I might send it to them, say, we discussed this.
You should do that.
We could send it now, we could do a live postcard sending.
Yeah, say, this is your house.
This is your house, did you know?
Well, I think maybe if you send a scan of it and say, it's yours for 50 quid.
Yeah. That's, yes, I don't know. I think I might be pushing it with that. But yes, but it's a sort of memento. I could look at that and go, ah, that doesn't really remind me of home because we didn't live in a...
We didn't live at that house.
But it reminds me, I used to walk past that on the way sort of to and
nice.
From everything.
Yeah,
so you
go,
yeah, it's very much... As soon as I see it, they go, oh, yeah, I know exactly where that is.
So you found that when you were searching for things from...
I was searching for things.
And that's the closest you could get.
That's about it, really. There's nothing else apart from, you know, some automatic... If you type in anything, it doesn't do, but you can buy endless... T-shirts and keyrings with that written on it
because they'll generate them,
themselves. But there's nothing actually of my village because there is nothing interesting enough has happened. Although Wurzel Gummidge was filmed.
That's huge.
Yeah.
It is huge. They're remaking again at the moment.
Are they?
So there is a huge weight of responsibility on the production from everyone in the village was in it. I wasn't. My middle brother was in it because they said, we want to shoot a scene in the school.
What?
Can we use the school and all the school children? They went, yeah, you know, because they'd all get paid in the school.
Yeah,
it being, as we know from film, they say, oh, we only need you for a day. And, of course, after 3 weeks of the kids not having lessons and thinking, this is brilliant, and the school put their foot down and said, right, I'm not doing this again.
Oh, my God.
And there's a brilliant shot of the church choir, which is everybody sort of in the village is in it at some point. And everyone in the village has got the Wurzel Gummidge DVDs and they can all sort of find exactly where they are and pause them and go, that's me! Because there were lots of sort of fates and it was
quite high budget.
Yeah, it was a big show.
It was a big thing. And John Pertwee used to come into the local pub. They had Wurzel Gummidge wallpaper and everyone was very excited when he'd come in and boom, there was a half a bitter, please, a very loud actor's voice. And we'd go, ooh!
Oh, he's in, Wurzel's in!
Wurzel's here! So it was very... That was a very big, exciting part of our youth. And we'd all watch it sort of absolutely religiously because it was filmed.
Because your village was in it. That's amazing.
And so 10 Acre Field, 100 Acre Field was up the road from us. And yeah. So that, in fact, I lied when I said nothing interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But it's sort of its time. And you kind of go, yeah, people don't...
It went on for a long time.
It was big budget ITV things. But when they, you know, you look at the production, they do huge song and dance numbers and great big...
And who was Aunt Sally? What's her name? She's still...
Eunice Stubbs.
Yeah, I loved her.
Eunice Stubbs and... Geoffrey Baildon was the crow man.
I went
Barbara Windsor was in it. Saucy Sally was the front of one of the ships.
Maybe for series three.
Yeah.
Expanded with it.
Oh, brought it in for the dads. And there's an amazing...
The sexy scarecrow.
There's an incredible Christmas special called Cup of Tea and a Slice of Cake, which involves Billy Connolly as Tatty Bogle, the Scottish, terrifying Scottish scarecrow that comes down. And they all gather for the scarecrow's ball. And it's this amazing scene of hundreds of scarecrows doing really elaborate dancing and
I used to watch it, but I don't remember any of this happening.
Yeah, it's very the original books are quite scary and quite terrifying.
We had a fancy dress party when we were kids, and I went as Wurzel Gummidge. And my mum stuffed the suit with straw. Everyone else was like Minnie Mouse, and there was me, like, nope, Wurzel Gummidge.
Dripping straw.
Absolutely dripping with straw, yeah.
It was a really scary programme, I remember.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Quite grotesque.
He used to take his head off, and the crowman was terrifying and scary.
I remember you always felt a bit like... that thing about 80s programmes, which I don't think exists anymore, you felt like Wurzel could flip and hurt someone. But that was okay because he was being nice right now and you should appreciate that.
But just watch out, he could kill a child with his bare
hands. Yeah, like you didn't feel safe, but that's how most TV made you feel. You were like...
Well, I started reading the books to the kids and they didn't really like them. They found it a bit slow moving or whatever. But they, he's quite unpleasant and dangerous. He's a stranger, basically.
Yeah, he's got an edge to him.
Who turns up in their kitchen because the kids stole his umbrella when they were out in the rain. They pinch it off a scarecrow and he comes back to get it back. And it's like,
that's a start of a horror film.
Yeah. It's a horrible sort of corpse like thing with a turnip for a head striding into your, give me my umbrella.
Okay, that's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
I imagine the new series, they'll try and make it dark because that's what they do now.
Yeah.
They probably don't need to.
Yeah.
It's all there.
Just do it.
It's all there in the.
Are they filming it in the village again? No,
sadly not.
Oh, that's sad. It's hard.
But it will be watched heavily from the village. You can be assured. People,
for those who remember,
we will see if they've done this.
Yeah, not as good. Not as good. Not as good.
I was in that bit. Oh no,
done that wrong.
Oh yeah,
that's not how it happened.
But it's nice because it's got a little time capsule on the village so that everyone, like my brother who is now yeah, well, he's sort of nearly 50-ish something. You know, there's him as an angelic choir boy with a ruff on singing, and the camera sort of passes over everybody, and everyone can spot themselves.
Yeah.
And I never got to be in that. I was furious.
Oh, yeah. But you've made up for it, Justin, I think.
I think this is why I've gone off the career, because I was denied my childhood chance to be in Wurzel or Gummidge. You know, if I'd have done that, I could have done a proper job.
Yeah,
that was
like
grit in the oyster.
Yeah,
that could have been
something
useful. But, yes.
Well, I had no idea that a thatched cottage would generate such mixed and interesting memories.
It's all tied in a straw, isn't it?
That's why you built it.
Back to the thatching.
Very good. Well, a final cards from Cariad we have here. I think you've got two for one again.
Yes.
And you've gone arty.
I've gone arty because every time I go and see an exhibition, I buy a postcard still. I am unable to walk away. And do you have that thing where the picture you like, they don't have the postcard of it?
Yeah.
Oh, that drives me mad.
Or the colours are wrong. It's completely unrecognisable.
Or even if you see one, you think, oh, that was... I can't wait to buy that postcard. And it's like, the Tate have only produced six, if not that one. So, I have two. I think they might both be Tate... Oh, no, apologies. One's Royal Academy, one is V&A. Apologies.
They're both huge.
They're both huge. They're both bigger, so they probably... made me pay a little bit more for them. And they're two exhibitions that sort of really stayed with me. My mum, again, it's probably about my mum. My mum is very into art, so I always go to museums with her. And the first one is a very famous photo of David Bowie, and it's called The Archer. It's from the Station to Station tour. It's taken by John Rowland in 1976. And I think I hadn't seen it until I went to the very famous David Bowie exhibition at the V&A.
The V&A one,
So I'm
Which was only a few years before he died, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it was. And I'm a massive Bowie fan, and... that exhibition was, that sounding up, was life-changing. Like, it was one of the greatest exhibitions I've ever been to. And some people get really upset because they're like, that's the one they go, oh, I didn't go to it. And I'm like, you should have done, you missed out.
Should have.
It was insanely good. So, and this is my all-time favourite picture of David, because I just think it's, Station to Station is my favourite album. I love this black, white shirt, black suit look. And they had the suit there. They had the suit there. And honest to God, it looked like a stick could live in it. It was like, I couldn't have fit in it.
He was the thin white Duke at this time.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, the thin white coked up Duke. It was extremely tiny. And, the exhibition was just incredible. It was absolutely, it was like, not just because it's David Bowie, but the way they did it. Was like you had these headphones on as soon as you came in, as you moved through, the music was changing and stuff. Like you moved into different rooms, which at the time was like, what? Yeah. Like,
that's,
how
that's
are you
kind
doing
of
it?
The first of these rock and roll exhibitions,
yeah,
as well, isn't it? Because they've
the
done a few
one.
Since, you know, there's been the Rolling Stones one. And
they did,
they
did Alexander McQueen afterwards, and then they did the big Frida Kahlo. So I think that it was the first one V&A did that was so successful. It toured like globally. Mm-hmm. But this picture of David, I just think, is. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Describe it to us.
So, yeah, it's a black and white picture. He's in black and white, and he's... it's called The Archer because he's doing it as if he's holding a bow and arrow, but at the one end is the microphone. And I think...
Well, he's got his hand sort of on the back of his head rather than back.
Yeah, sort of archerish pose,
He's
suppose.
Doing a bit of his sort of
pushing his head forward.
Old Lindsay Kemp mime, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yeah. And it looks very 1930s and kind of silent film almost. Like his eyebrows are very... he looks like, a matinee idol.
It's very unlit, isn't it? Smallest amount of light on him.
Yeah, and I think there's like a bracelet on him or the microphone wire going around him. But it's very dark and I just... To me, honestly, I love Barry so much. To me, it's like... It sums up how beautiful a person he is as an artist. Like, it's just the photograph is beautiful.
There's an exquisiteness to it.
Yeah, there's absolute exquisiteness to it. Yeah, and I really like black and white photos a lot. So, yeah, I bought lots of stuff from that exhibition. I bought a whole collection of David Bowie postcards with a whole box, which I...
Oh, yes.
If you get sent one of those for me, you are very special.
Yes, you don't want to send them.
They did a collection of them, and it was called Where is David Bowie? And it was all sealed in this book. And it's like... It's some of the postcards are photos, some of it are lyrics that he wrote down or like planning music videos.
Nice.
It's and then everyone said, oh, you shouldn't use it. And I was like, no, I will use it because that's how I'm not one of those people who thinks, I'm going to keep it as plastic. That's not what David would have wanted. Okay, he would have wanted.
You won't be writing a note to the milkman with it.
Yeah.
No, but if I send you one of those, it's very special. So yeah, and because he's such an inspiration to me, so these two postcards both have tape on them because they're taped up at my desk. So it's like, that's where if I feel like, oh, what's the point? What am I doing? I look and I think,
do you know what? Brilliant.
Come on, David. What would David say right now? I mean, probably something.
Do some work, Carrie.
Yeah, exactly. Write some jokes. probably that's what he'd say. But yeah, Yeah, he's so important to me. He's just massive.
And you took, so you've literally taken them down to bring here?
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. And a bit of your wall came with them,
didn't you? Yeah. Oh, no, so I've had to blue tack and tape them because it's a heavy card. What's that, A6?
Ooh,
slightly bigger, isn't it?
It's bigger than a postcard.
Yeah, slightly bigger. And then the next one is from the Royal Academy Ai Weiwei exhibition, and it's a famous triptych of pictures, and it's called Dropping a Han Dynasty Urn from 1995. And it's three shots. So the first shot is, should I call him Ai? Ai, holding the urn, dropping the urn, and then the urn
smashing.
I think
he's probably called Weiwei, isn't he?
Mr. Weiwei.
Or Mr. Wei.
Mr. Wei.
Actually, I don't know. And it'd be offensive to muck around with it too much.
Yeah. Ai Weiwei. And I went to the Ai Weiwei exhibition they had at the Royal Academy, and again, it just... So I go to a lot of exhibitions, and sometimes they're rubbish. So the ones that stay with you, this really stayed with me, because as a creative, someone who writes, there's something so amazing for me about these three pictures, because it just sums up the pointlessness of what we do. Like, it's pointless to try and do perfection and try and create anything, because it can be smashed and destroyed, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. That's what I take from that. Obviously, I think he was making a larger political point.
But also, the smashing becomes art in itself.
Yeah, it becomes art
so,
in itself.
So, you know, the bit you dropped, maybe the bit that you need to pick up again.
Yeah.
Would it be artistic if no one had picked, no one had taken a photo of him doing it?
Exactly, yeah. Well, then it would just be an accident.
Maybe that's true, yeah.
But luckily, he got someone to take a picture so he could vote. No, it's art.
And it's Han Dynasty, which would
be... So Han Dynasty, apparently, although someone said to me, it's not a real Han Dynasty urn, but I was like, that's not the point. The point is, Ai Weiwei says it's a Han Dynasty urn.
Yes, and you don't know that when you see it.
So. Yeah, you don't. It seems... I think what I found when I saw it at the exhibition, obviously at the exhibition they had these huge photos of it. It just seemed so shocking. It seemed so shocking to see an artist destroying another piece of art. And I thought, it's not often that you find work that's... Sorry, I'm so serious about art. That seems genuinely provocative to me. I was like, God, that's so shocking.
Because it's naughty, it's wrong.
It's so naughty, yeah. And such a simple act of an artist breaking something.
Yeah, doing...
And I guess it's interesting what we're talking about, things that are old and are precious and things that people have said, oh, that's important because it's old. Yeah. And for him just to be like, I'm going to smash it. It's like, oh, wow. This.
How big are the pictures in reality? This postcard is long.
It's long.
Double length, triple length, whatever. But the actual pictures, when you see them in the exhibition...
They were huge. They were, like, absolutely massive. Like, I can't even... I'm not very good at, like... I don't know, like 2 foot high, and they had the three next to each other. So as you came in, you saw them on one wall. So it really was.
And there's
like
a sort of sense of frozen motion, isn't there?
Particularly
the second one, where it's imminent crash.
Yeah, I like that the vase is out of focus because it's falling, and his hands are completely frozen.
This has nothing to do with
me. Nothing to do with me.
Too late, mate. Too late.
I just
also he's looking straight at you, isn't he?
Yeah, he's looking straight at you. Yeah, it's very provocative.
Kind of, I'm not even going to worry about this.
And the exhibition was amazing. Like, I just love his artwork. I just think he's such an interesting person, and I suppose I'm very into the past, but it's quite nice to have an artist who's still going and still doing interesting choices and still talking about things that are happening right now. Like that exhibition, he had some incredible these like steel, not pylons, they were from, he'd laid them all out, like these brown rusty, they go in buildings, like these brown,
so reinforcement
and he'd laid them all out and they looked like a wave, so it's like really rusty waves, but then when you read it was all from a school that had collapsed in China and that hadn't been built properly, they hadn't funded properly, and he'd collected them all and beaten them all straight and then made these waves and stuff like that. You just think, oh my God, like it's interesting, isn't it, when you think about advertising or communication and messages, when someone can just take something. And I was like, oh, I understand that pain in a way that if someone just told me that story, I'd be like, oh, right, that's a bad thing that happened in China. I feel bad, but I don't know how to connect to it. But, yeah, the whole exhibition was filled with things where you're like, oh, that's terrible, isn't it? And you've really made me understand that that's happening.
So you've created a physical thing with the resonances and the meaning.
And it was this it was beautiful. All these, you know, the reinforced, like, looked like waves and they were undulating. They filled an entire room. So you came into the room and you would sort of like, oh, that's pretty. And you would like walk around it, be like, what is it?
Nice.
Oh, wow, it's all like way, okay. And then you'd read the tiny plaque and you were like, oh. Yeah, and he'd done a lot of work with this school that had collapsed and like investigated it and taken lots of photos and stuff. So, yeah, again, I just think he's so interesting and so... And maybe it's crass and very typical white colonialist attitude to take something from this of, like, creativity, but these three images for me just really make me think, oh, remember there's no point to a lot of things, so don't worry about them.
Very good. I think I'd take something different from it, but that's the joy of it, isn't it, really?
What do you take?
Well, I think it is about taking... So for me, I see it and I think it's taking something old and precious and kind of reshaping it, doing something different with it. Now, it's and maybe you have to destroy the old to create the new kind of thing.
But that's what I love about it. You can take so much from it. I think in three incredibly simple images, you know, it doesn't... And it's a bit unfair to put it next to the old Thatcher photo.
Because there's some kind of crossover somewhere.
Yeah.
I can feel something. The past, the present.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I mean. Like, they're so simple. It's such a simple image.
Well, that thing of, you know, reverence for the old and reverence for... Yeah. We must revere and respect this urn because it's ancient.
Because somebody says someone's given it this
name. And again, having a thatched roof is a massive inconvenience. I mean, much better if they took that all off and just put some sort of decent slate
on it. I would whip that right off.
That right off. It's going to be ridiculous. Get rid of this because it's, you know... They are expensive to maintain. The huge fire hazards, huge...
He'd be up that ladder.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a dialogue between the two about nostalgia as I'm really allergic to nostalgia.
I think you're right with my beer mat collection. I think when I first started, I can go back to this, but when I first started doing it, there was a sort of nostalgic sense of, I think this was just, I had kids, or sort of some kind of, I remember what it was like when I used to sit in pubs at this and after a while you kind of go, yeah, it was good, but also it was awful. You do look at these kind of images of sozzled men and bucks and barmaids. You go, no, it wasn't great.
Yeah,
it wasn't a brilliant place to be.
But it's about like the truth of it, isn't it? Like, it's not one or the other. It's a very the past is very complicated. That's what I think. That's what I think. Yeah, with that hand in his urn, like, he's not right to smash something that's old. It's not like, oh, that's, smash everything. It's just, it just sets off lots of thoughts in your head. And I think.
And it wasn't mine. He didn't steal it from me and smash
it. No, he didn't. I don't know where he got it from. Cheeky Ai Weiwei.
Nipped into a museum. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, look, thank you very much, both of you, for sharing your philosophical reflections about the past, about postcards, about communication. I'm very thrilled that you shared them with me and with the listeners. Another quick reminder for those of you at home, images of the cards that sent us hurtling towards these memories and stories are all on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, including one last one here from me in the past postcard style. And this is a lovely picture, actually. I'm both a bit of a treat for you.
Oh, wow.
It's some Highland cattle from 1962.
Oh.
They haven't evolved much since then, I don't think. nice old J. Arthur Dixon card. There's a particular way of printing and taking the pictures. And actually, this is a mystery, this card, because I can't quite read the message, and I'm wondering if you can help me. The bit I can read says, "Our house was burgled a little while ago, but the something are still intact." Now, it might be cassocks or it might be cassettes, but from 1962 it's probably cassocks. But why are they asking about the cassocks?
Where does it say?
It goes up again.
Oh, I can't see where it says,
up to the top where it says the somethings are still intact.
Oh, yeah. I think it's cassocks, you're right.
Or Catholics, but that would be another thing.
Burglars didn't get the Catholics.
Cat, cupcakes, cat, cass. No, I can't. I'm going to be... cat, cat, coat, almost oat flakes. I mean, it could be anything.
Well, I think it's a good articulation of my point that the past is unknowable.
This
one certainly is.
I mean, cassocks-wise, there's no clue. It's not addressed to a reverend.
But cassocks are of no great value, I don't think. I think they're just...
I don't think it is cassocks.
I used to sing in a choir. They're surprisingly expensive church outfit things.
There you go.
ones to fit me were. Anyway, they're to send off to some sort of clown outfit.
Cafelets? What's a cafelet? That looks like two Fs. Or is it S's?
It obviously meant something immediately to the person. Thank God they're okay,
My lucky cassock collection is intact.
The cupcakes are okay. It's not cassettes. Wow. There were no cassettes in 1962.
No.
Hassocks, which are the things you kneel on, aren't they?
It's a C there at the beginning, I think.
That is impossible.
Well, what I'll do is I will post, unusually, I'll post the message side of the card on the internet and
let people decide.
People can decide for themselves. Because I think it's beaten the jury here.
I don't know.
Well, before we let Justin and Kerry back to their real lives, I've got just one more postcard for you both. It's customary for us to end the programme one of these.
Is that a record one?
Beautiful.
One you can play?
A record postcard.
I've seen them. They used to like have them on like Smash Hits used to occasionally do them and stuff.
They're
like
all like flexi discs.
Swiss.
But this is a postcard.
So this is Swiss, and
musical picture.
It's from the Susten Pass, I guess.
I don't know where that is. Well, it must be in Switzerland.
Yeah, my Swiss is as strong as my Welsh. That's beautiful,
wow.
isn't it?
Wow. But it's got like an American car on the front. Yeah,
well, it's a very nice car as well, isn't it?
Yeah, Mustangy thing driving into a...
Swiss Alps?
Driving into a... Oh, what's, oh, a tunnel, that's the word. A hole in a mountain. How can that be? And,
a mountain hole.
Have you played it? What does it play?
Well, Tom is just next door. If we pass it to him, he Ooh, can use this wow. technology and we can see if we can make it
Actually,
play.
That's
oh, my
exciting.
God, yeah.
Oh, nice crackle.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
That's not Bowie.
It's not, well, unless it's late Bowie.
Yeah. Well, that fits.
Yeah.
No surprise, I suppose.
Yeah, you'd be disappointed
but then
if
I don't
it was
know,
Bowie.
With that image of that car, you'd imagine it might be some sort of surf music coming into the...
Yeah.
Oh, it is skipping a bit, I think.
I'm just going to do the fast bit soon. That's the bit of the yodeling I like, where they kind of...
I always say the same thing. It's not bad for a piece of cardboard.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Oh, there's
oh, here
the,
we go.
Here we go. Yeah, it's
the
jaunty.
I've always meant to learn how to yodel. It's one of those things.
You'd suit yodeling?
I think I would.
Mm.
Well, as the car approaches the mountain hole, never to enter, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Carrie Ad Lloyd and Justin Edwards. Thank you both.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at pastpostcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.